Future-proof extra.
With Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Science Foundation Ireland.
On News Talk.
Now, we're all fairly familiar with the idea of the Stone Age. Roughly speaking, humans were using stone tools for, we think, around 3 million years until the onset of the Bronze Age, which is a few thousand years ago. But surely wood is easier to fashion than stone. So was there ever a wooden age, and where would that fit into things? Well, Dirk Leder is a research associate in the Office for Cultural Heritage in Lower Saxony. He joins me now. Welcome to the programme, Dirk. If you wouldn't mind just giving us a brief time scale of tool use. I know the dates with you know, paleoanthropology and so on, the dates can be kind of funny, but just roughly from tool use to today, what sort of ages do we think we have?
Yeah, okay, so tool use or human tool use is commonly connected to the Stone Age, as you just highlighted, and there's a bit of a debate when tool use, or actually tool manufacture, which is a bit more easily to detect, has started. So I think the current idea is around about 3 million years ago, where people in Africa, Central Africa, Western Africa, essentially, produced the first very simple stone flakes and probably use them for various activities, cutting and so on. But this is debatable. Of course, apes also sort of accidentally produce stone tools while battering on or nut cracking on rocks. And so it's a bit complicated to assess how intentional these stone tools were. But common knowledge would say 3 million years ago, these very simple flakes should be stone tools. Yeah.
Right. And I mean, obviously, before then, it's possible that humans just threw rocks at their prey and didn't fashion them, which also could be quite, you know, effective in hunting down dinner. But when we think of tool use, we often think of, you know, the Stone Age and then the Bronze Age and so on, where things got more and more complicated. But when we think of this time, what exactly is going on? If we think about, say, 300,000 years ago, when this really interesting find that we're going to talk about happened, what was Central Europe looking like? And where were humans in their development, you know, in terms of social or tool use or society?
Yeah, okay. So we are talking about more or less Europe and maybe Central Europe 300,000 years ago. So before and after that, we have the so-called Ice Age. So the northern glaciers extend all the way to Central Europe. The British glaciers advance away to the south of England and so on. But we also, within these 2.5 million years of Ice Age, we have very warm periods, like our Holocene period nowadays is probably just a period within an ice age of 10 and 20,000 years length. And a similar warm period was actually present 300,000 years ago. So we're talking about wooded areas with or wooded landscapes with trees you would commonly know nowadays, like hazelnut, ash trees, and so on, but also with grass steppe elements, so open landscapes next to wooded landscapes. And these landscapes were roamed by not just humans, but also all sorts of animals, like stray tusks, elephants that are slightly bigger or much bigger than African elephants nowadays, sorts of rhinos. We had saber-toothed cats, so saber-toothed tigers, if you want to call it that, and all sorts of other animals you may not see today, but also like fallow deer were there, some bears and so on, so animals you would see nowadays. When it comes to the human species or the human cultural stage, if you like, they were living as hunter-gatherers, so in small communities of 20, 25 people as a core group, so family bands. And of course, we assume there's gatherings of larger groups every now and then in annual cycles. Yeah, and these people were roaming in the landscape and made use of the land, plant, animal food, whatever was accessible to them.
And so our understanding of what went on at that time, it really is just the sort of stone and skeletons that we find. Is that correct? Because whatever materials, textures, wood they may have managed to fashion, it just would not survive that length of time to be identified today?
Yeah, and that's the very reason why it's called the Stone Age. Of course, everything else that's organic, like
not
like
stone,
bone and yeah. and wood and feathers, maybe things like that, plant materials, they just vanish far too quickly. And then we have these very exceptional cases like Schöningen in Germany or Clacton-on-Sea in England, where we have preservation of wooden remains from this Stone Age era. And all of a sudden we think, okay, what if preservation conditions were similar throughout the Stone Age and we had, like, instead of thousands of sites with just stones, we also would have had bone and wooden remains. Would we rather speak of the Wood Age, and do we overlook the importance of wood, woodworking, wooden tools in the past, and only at exceptional sites we can actually say anything about woodworking technology and wooden tools?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that we use this term as the Stone Age, when surely wooden tool use must have been predating stone tool use, because it's so easy to, you know, to rip the bark off a branch and make a spear. But my first question is, aren't there stone tools that we would be able to, you know, I guess understand that they were used for fashioning wood? Wouldn't we have examples of those? Have we found stone tools that may have been used for the purpose of sharpening spears or any sort of wooden tools?
Yes, of course, there's these so-called user studies on mostly flint tools, but also other stone tool materials, quartzite and so on. So these user studies tell us that butchering meat was one of the main purposes of these stone tools, but also woodworking at a very early stage. So we're talking 2 million, 2.5 million years ago, we have indirect evidence of woodworking, or at least working on plant material, that's harder, so technical terms. But yeah, let's say woodworking has been around or at least for as long as stone tool production and stone tool use. So I think we can see it as a partnership between wooden tools and stone tools. Of course, you also need to shape the wooden tools with something, and probably the most stone tools.
Yeah, so maybe we should have been talking about the Wooden Age before, or at least alongside the Stone Age. So I want to talk about this Schöningen site. But before I do, what environments exist that would preserve wooden tools? Because it seems to me that there must be some sort of chemical or physical environments that actually would preserve wood for that length of time. Schöningen obviously is one, but are there other types of environments that we think it is possible that wood, wooden tools, those sort of structures that made from wood might have survived a length of 300,000 years or older?
Yeah, very good question, Jonathan. So Schöningen is one of the very prestigious sites where you have the very lucky case of wood preservation due to its lake environment. So the archaeological site of Schöningen was situated on a Paleolithic lake site, and there you have the very positive effect of waterlogged wood. So once the wood, the spears or whatever wooden tools end up in the water, they are sealed pretty well from bacterial attacks. So wood is mostly taken apart by fungus or bacteria, and the water actually preserves that. Plus, in Schöningen, we have the effect of very rapid sedimentation. So that means soil comes in very, very quickly to cover up these wooden tools. And we have these water-saturated soils that have really preserved the wood very, very well. From other sites, we know there's wooden remains preserved. They're usually also connected to waterlogged situations, be it on previous river streams or equally lakes. So water really has a great effect on wooden preservation. And it's not enough that the wood is waterlogged instantly, but it needs to be continuously waterlogged until it's been excavated. And these are very exceptional circumstances.
Right, so let's talk about Schöningen and what was found there. So this is quite extraordinary because it was quite a big hole. Can you take me through your research and what was found at Schöningen, what it tells us about tool use at that time?
Yeah, I think I have to briefly summarize the history or research history of it. So Schöningen is or has become discovered in a open cast lignite mine. So a lot of bucket excavators excavating coal, essentially. And during that time, there was an archaeologist basically jumping in this huge hole and trying to rescue whatever it is to rescue. And in 1994, he actually discovered the first wooden artifact, which turned out to be a throwing stick. And then he found more or less 10 spears in the coming years after that. So until quite recently, until our project started, our site or Schöningen was known for 10 wooden spears plus one or two throwing sticks. And that was all the knowledge we had. Now, through our research project in the last years, we found there's not only these 10 spears, but also a lot of spear point fragments, a lot of spear shaft fragments, a lot more throwing sticks, I think 7 now. And we also have these 35 split wood tools, so small tools created on split woods. And these were used for like piercing hides or smoothing hides, processing plants. So next to the aspect of spears and hunting, we also have the aspect of more, well, let's say, domestic use of tools in processing hides and plants. This is quite extraordinary. And we also have some production waste of wooden tool production and wooden tool repair.
All right. So this is a really very definite site to give us a rich a picture of what humans were doing at that time. What is it like to find this stuff, like to be leading an expedition and find stuff that really changes our understanding of human development?
Yeah, personally, I was fortunate or unfortunate, it depends how you look at it. So I didn't excavate the material myself, but I had the clean material presented in the lab or preserved in the lab. So I was able to work on the material that had been recovered in the 30 years before. So excavations are still ongoing at Schöningen. There are still a lot of things colleagues of us find. But we were able to work with previously excavated material. And this is, of course, world-class material, very exceptional preservation, very good preservation. You can see like tiny details, working traces, use wear, and so on. So the tips are very pointy still. So this is really great material to work with.
Okay, so you find these spears. What does finding a bunch of spears actually teach us? Because presumably we would have imagined that would have used spears before. What detail have you gotten from these spears, and what does it teach you about how pre-Homo sapiens hunted and how advanced and developed their tools were?
So maybe with Stone Age spears, we have the image in our minds that it's just a stick with a point and that's it. But we were actually able to see, since we have 10 and more, 10 spears and more point fragments, shaft fragments, we were able to discover that there is an actual standardized production sequence behind it. So let's say the frontal point is constructed in a certain way. When you take a tree stem, in the center of the stem, you always have this pith, which is a weak spot in the wooden material. So you have to construct the front point you want to stab the animal with in a way that it is offset from this weak spot, which the Schöning people did, and very well so. Then you have a long, rather straight shaft. And what's interesting from a ballistics point of view is that the weight of the spear is in the front quarter or front half of the spear, so it's able to fly, meaning you can throw it very easily and it's going to fall down, penetrating the animal.
How do you know that? I mean, apart from the design, you presumably didn't throw these things. Were you able to test the ballistics using modeling, or how do you do it?
Of course, we didn't throw the original pieces, but colleagues of mine, especially Annemieke Milks from Reading University, she did a lot of experiments in previous years using spears for thrusting and throwing with professional military personnel, but also javelin throwers. And those were great.
So she got military experts and javelin throwers to sort of test the flight of various model sticks?
Yeah, the military personnel were trained in bayonet usage. So those pointy blades you put on rifles and then you stab something. They were trained in that. So that was the stabbing thrusting experiment. And then the javelin throwers were used, let's say, to target or to hit targets on short distances, like between 5 and 25 meters, to check for accuracy, velocity, and all these scientific parameters. And it turns out with those wooden spear appliques, you have, first of all, very, very deep impact. So either thrusting or throwing gives you 20 to 25 centimeters penetration impact. Which would be quite lethal, of course. And
If you stab something 25 centimeters deep, it usually does not do well.
Then the accuracy was quite good too. So I think around 20 to 50 meters was pretty good. And these javelin throwers who are trained to throw distances. So ethnographic records show us that with people who still live on spear hunting are much better with their accuracy and distances.
So it sounds like Shonagan showed evidence of sort of, if not a spear factory, certainly an advanced craftsmanship when it came to developing high quality spears. Mm-hmm. And it sort of hints that this is something that had been done for quite some time. Is that what you take away from it? What would you say the find at Shonagan has taught us about how these people hunted?
Yeah, first of all, we were trying to better understand how these spears and throwing sticks were constructed. So we were trying to follow by investigating the use or the production traces, how these were produced in various steps. And it turns out these wooden spears are constructed in a more complex way than, for example, hand axes that were quite well known at this time too, which are usually considered the most complex tools of this time. And spears and wooden sticks are just constructed with more complexity. And for the hunting, it tells us, there's various aspects to it. So we shouldn't only assume there's a single hunter that throws one spear at a horse or at an elephant. The elephant or horse dies and that's it. Usually it's a communal activity, which also means a lot of previous communication, who plays what part and what's the target, how do we time the first spear throw, which direction should we come from. Of course, there's wind and the animal might smell us. Is it a prey that runs away quickly, or can we confront it? So communal activities, and we have two hunting weapon systems, which is the throwing spears, but also the throwing sticks. So the spears can be used for larger game like horses, deer, fellow deer, and so on. And the throwing sticks are for the fast, small prey, like birds and hare, that you can throw at them, and then they're knocked out for a few moments, and then, of course, you can hunt them down at the end.
Very cool. And as you say, the exhibition continues at Shonagan, so it'll be really interesting to see what we learn from sites like this over the next few years. And possibly, who knows, we may find more sites that give us a richer idea of what went on during what we're now going to call from now on the Wooden Age. It's been great speaking with you, Dirk Leder. Dirk Leder is from the Cultural Heritage in Lower Saxony. Thanks very much for talking to us about your
work. Thanks for having me, Jonathan.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Science Foundation Ireland
on News Talk.